And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9, after our 1 week hiatus after Thanksgiving here in the United States. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez, and Brian, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, 29 again. Nailed it.
That's right.
Very nice. Not exactly. A day over 29.
That's right. So let's get right into it. So our top story is Visual Studio 2012 Update 1. Is available. So Dan, we've talked about this in the past, about how Visual Studio is moving to more of a continuous delivery model, features that didn't necessarily make it into RTM or bug fixes, enhancements based on customer feedback,
sure.
Are now starting to ship into these kind of regular updates, and this is the first down payment on that.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's short intervals too, right? So you're talking quarterly updates. I mean, this is fast.
It really is. And if you follow the links, you can download Update 1 directly. In the fullness of time, you will eventually get a toast next to the Visual Studio window. So when you launch that, you'll get the little toast that comes up and advertises Update 1 if you haven't already installed it. If you're somebody who just uses a tool like Microsoft Test Manager, you won't get that toast in this particular update. But if you install Update 1, they will let you know of future updates after that. And for those of you that...
So what are some of the key things that people want to know about Update 1? What's in Update 1?
Well, so there's a lot of good stuff around being able to debug dumps that are coming off of ARM devices, for example.
Sure.
Lots of really low-level stuff. There's the ability for you to do static analysis against Windows Phone 8 projects. There's also the ability for you to, I think actually, if I'm not mistaken, that the Windows Phone development is built into it. It might still require an SDK. I'd have to fact check that.
There's improvements on JavaScript IntelliSense for Windows 8 projects as well. So kind of a lot of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of people may have noticed that the Test Explorer window replaces all the litany of other unit testing windows that we used to have in the past. And so when they revamped that, there were a few features around being able to like filter and sort those test cases
that they didn't
get to. So that's now included. The ability to data bind unit tests, and a lot of stuff, of course, on the ALM side as well. So if you're using Team Foundation Server, there's a corresponding TFS 2012 Update 1 that you should think about getting. That includes a lot more support for doing drag and drop scenarios on the web access, a Kanban board built in. So we've had Kanban on TFS on top of the Azure service, the Team Foundation service, for a while.
Right.
Now that's available on premises as well. So really just a lot of stuff. Oh, the ability for you to do unit testing, IntelliTrace, and one more, load testing of SharePoint on-premises applications as well is included with Update 1. So really just a lot of stuff across the board.
Cool, very cool.
Yeah, and there's another thing worth pointing out for people that that want to run this offline, because the default link is a web installer, but you can actually install this offline. You end up running the web installer with a command line switch, and it downloads an ISO that you can use. So that's all possible.
Now, another interesting part was the productivity power tools.
That's right.
So look at this monster of stuff. And really, for folks that have used productivity power tools, this is a super popular extension that has existed for a while in Visual Studio 2010. And they've relaunched it for Visual Studio 2012, adding a lot of the features like the enhanced scroll bar, where you can actually choose how you want your scroll bar to look, so you can actually have it click in and see, give you metadata about your code, and actually see information when you mouse over, like where you are in the code file, which I absolutely love. Automatic brace completion, organizing imports, sorry, for Visual Basic, which is the same as kind of the organizing using. Control click to go to definition, so you don't have to do the right click, go to definition. And then some of the other tools like color printing and power commands. Those used to be separate ones. They're all now bundled in the big productivity power tools for 2012. And then a new one, which is called Quick Tasks. So actually, see if you can pull this up and see if some of these are readable. But basically, it's a series of tasks, like sort of common, almost think of these as macros, if you will. So it's like collapse region, expand regions, text font minus, text font restores the default text font 0, text font reset. It basically allows you to kind of jump and set up different kind of tasks for common things. So like there's a present on one, which I thought was cool, because so many of us do presentations, so being able to have something allows you to switch the IDE settings back and forth easily is pretty awesome.
That is really nice, actually. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, so, very, very cool stuff.
Very good. So here's an article by Joel Citizen here. and Andrew Byrne, actually, friend of the show. So he wrote how to build a companion Windows Phone app for Windows 8.
Yeah. So the idea is, and he goes through a lot of the resources, and probably one of the coolest things is he has kind of the what type of developer are you, which you can see on the right side of the screen. So if you're like totally new to the platform, or you're a Windows Phone app developer that wants to learn about Windows 8, or you're a Windows Store app developer that wants to learn about Windows Phone, or you're from a totally different platform, here's kind of the best resources to get started.
Right.
But the idea is it's just a simple photo sharing app that you can, for example, use NFC tags and exchange information with a Windows Store app.
Mm.
Right. So Phone 8 to Windows Store, how you actually do it, and the sample's available as well.
Got it. And so our next story here is a lap around the Windows Phone 8 SDK. The Windows Phone 8 SDK has been available for 3 or 4 weeks now, and there's a long list of things that are available in the Phone SDK. We'll just go through a few of them here. So for example, there's a much better emulator now. So the emulator runs on Hyper-V, so you do have to have Hyper-V on your machine in order to use the emulator now. But the advantage of that is that it's actually running the exact same kernel that is running on the Windows Phone device itself, so you really get the full fidelity debugging experience, and everything that you would expect to see on the device is actually running within the emulator. Another thing that you can do is you can now go through a lot of the tests that your phone application will go through when you submit them to the marketplace certification process. You can do that right from within the SDK, just like you would with the Windows Store application. Exactly. And just a whole lot of really nice stuff in here. Go through the blog post, but really it's a massive release for complementing the Windows Phone 8 experience.
Very cool.
Yeah. And the training kit as well.
Yeah, so training kit, obviously, you know, we talked about a number of training kits before. This training kit is obviously for Windows Phone 8. So the idea is how you use different features with Windows Phone 8. What are some of the unique features, including, you know, one of my favorites is the near field communication. Mm-hmm. So a lot of us have upgraded on campus to use Windows Phone, and probably one of the funnest things is, hey, I have a contact, and you know, you do the quick exchange of information. Ooh, what do I want to send this person?
So you have to put it into the contact first.
I wish NFC is turned on by default.
Okay.
So you can bump, and then it pairs, and then you get the prompt for
So it's just always looking for another thing to bump with.
Yeah, by default.
Okay.
So you can turn that off.
Okay.
If you want to.
Got it. All right. So you don't even have to go into a particular app, and you're good to go.
Yeah. That's good. So async, moving right along. Async back for Visual Studio 2012. So there's a number of things that are included in the SDK that changes that make it the API is more WinRT compatible, meaning they are async and awaitable, so you can use the async keyword.
Mm-hmm.
By default in the Windows Phone 7 world, what you'd be doing for some of the libraries, because not all of them, some of the libraries you'd be using callbacks, meaning I need to do a web request, I need to say when that task is completed, I say plus equals, and then I say this is my callback method. And then on my callback, I then said, you know, textbox1.status or whatever you're doing, right? And then you actually make the async call,
right.
And then eventually your callback gets called. And what you can do now, and this is sort of the old programming model, and you know, Mads has a great session from Build on doing the no more callbacks. So how can you avoid this? This async pack, what it does is, in addition to the Windows Phone features, you now can use the async pack for other things in Windows Phone 8 projects, like that web client library and streams that don't support the async and await. So you can make them async and awaitable even though they aren't right now.
Oh, interesting.
So so that way you can just say, hey, wait for, you know, get all text from a web page and just await that call, and that way you don't have to build a sloppy thing. You don't have to worry about an order of execution.
Yep.
All the wonderful things you get with async and await.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah, very cool stuff.
So a lot of people have gone out and gotten their Surfaces, their Windows RT devices, and if you have used a Surface, then of course you know that the traditional desktop applications just don't work in there, the x86 applications. So you might be wondering, how do you use Visual Studio to build for those devices and deploy to those devices? So this is just a really simple walkthrough that takes you through how you would hook up a Surface so that you can debug from another machine connected to this Surface and understand exactly how your applications are behaving on Visual Studio. So just a really, really great connected experience there.
Cool.
And then finally, some people may have seen the Hilo sample application. It's a Windows Store app written with C++ using best practices. This is the C++ team themselves that collaborated on this. And it just really shows why C++ is a great first-class language for building Windows Store applications. And this is a book that now complements the application, goes along with it. So if you're a C++ developer, you're just getting started with Windows Store, or you're looking for ways that you can make your applications better, this is a great free resource that you can go download and print out if you want to.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So building a light switch HTML client with eBay. So I love that eBay has all their data available via an API, but what exactly is this?
Yeah, so a few months ago we announced that in addition to the traditional Silverlight applications that you could build with light switch since it first came out, a lot of people were saying, you know, Silverlight's great, but I want to build applications that run on these, you know, bring your own devices, iPads and iPhones and Windows phones that, you know, maybe don't support Silverlight. And so the idea is that with light switch, you can now, in the latest version, you can start to target HTML applications, which automatically render dynamically based on the type of device that you're targeting or the user is using. And so this is just a quick walkthrough that takes through how to consume a popular data source, which happens to be eBay, and it shows you how you can use all that data to dynamically create a really nice looking HTML application.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And that brings us to Picks of the Week. So my pick of the week is our latest article by Brian Clint, Michael McLaughlin, I hope I'm saying his name correctly, MVP.
Sarah's brother.
And of course, Rick Braza and Andy Dunn actually introduced us to Michael.
Okay.
So what this is an application called Maelstrom. So it's available as an open source app. Written in C++ using DirectX. And the idea behind it is, hey, one of the cool things and differentiating about Windows Store apps mm-hmm. is if you have a machine that can run DX 11.1, you can actually output via an HDMI to a 3D TV and see 3D. So you can now build 3D apps, right? So that way I can see them, I put my glasses on, passive, active, whatever, whichever method doesn't really matter. You can actually build apps that are in 3D.
I don't know the difference. What is passive versus active?
Passive are ones that don't have any sort of synchronization with the TV. They're just glasses.
Oh,
active
okay.
ones are ones that are like almost
synchronized, like on like off, you know.
Yeah, they're like it's built for this TV. I'm synchronized in, and there's, you know, that level of synchronization between the TV and itself. But the point is, you're able to see 3D. So again, it's sort of an interactive application that they want to build and show off a number of features for building. Not just a stereoscopic 3D, you know, there's cool stuff for networking. There's cool stuff for where they had two wireless network cameras, so you could actually see people's faces in 3D by actually streaming the videos and then putting them together, the video streams, and just a ton of stuff in terms of how they did all the textures and, mm-hmm. and graphics and lighting and everything else related to DirectX. So. It kind of goes beyond the Hello World DirectX that people are looking for, and the next thing you want, like, wow, you don't want to go to fully finished game.
Yep.
This is like a good example to get started.
And what is Maelstrom?
Oh, okay. Did you not play it?
Well, I for the people at home that didn't make it to the build conference, I did play it, and Clint destroyed me on it, but he built the project. So
So the idea is a kind of air hockey, kind of Pong, mm-hmm. but you actually have a screen, a large touch screen. It's actually one of those really nice Lenovo machines.
Okay.
And you are moving a slider, and you're trying to get basically a ball to hit your shield, bounce back, hit your shield, bounce back, so not get it passed. So it's kind of
like
Pong-ish.
Tennis or Pong. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But of course, you're sort of in this hexadecimal.
Got it.
Ring, if
got
you
it.
Will.
Okay.
So
I will.
And it's got some power ups.
Kind of Tron-like.
Yeah.
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 Nice. So my pick of the week has really nothing to do with software developers other than this is really freaking cool. These guys went out and they built an entire rendering. Well, it's 90 minutes long, so I'm sure they cut some of the scenes, but they basically reproduced Lord of the Rings using these 3D Lego models. So I just thought that was really cool, and it's my pick of the week, so I'm going to choose what I want to choose.
It's unbelievable.
It really is.
You
yeah.
just have to start watching it. I've only watched the first like 5 minutes. Amazing.
The the thing is, like, I don't even have the commitment to watch the whole thing, and so I can't even imagine. So I have mad props for these guys that actually sat down and, like, you know, spent all this time doing it. I don't know if they got paid for it or what.
Oh, geez.
For all I know, they might get sued for it, you know, because
they used
the Lord of the Rings soundtrack and everything. But anyway, props to these guys. Really, really cool. And, you know, nice fan tribute, if you will. Just in time for The Hobbit.
Yes, which is December 5th.
Something around then. Yeah, I can't wait for it. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah,
awesome. So we will see you next week.
And happy birthday.
Thank you.